It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and our politics roundtable is back this week. Early Monday morning, candidates who want to run in the primaries next year lined up and began filing their petitions with the Illinois State Board of Elections. A little later on, we'll be talking with Jeremy Gorner of the Chicago Tribune about what he's been seeing as the process plays out this year. But first, it's off to Washington, where Linda Kenyon covers D.C. and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. As we go to air this morning, Friday morning, the U.S. House of Representatives has voted to expel George Santos of New York, the first time it's expelled someone who is not already convicted of a crime or a Confederate. In order to make our schedules meet, I spoke with Linda on Thursday afternoon, so we did not yet know the outcome of the Santos expulsion vote. With that said, Linda, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Happy to be back after the holiday.
Yes, me too. This week in the House, Republican Representative George Santos of New York is expected to face a vote Friday, which is today for our listeners, on being expelled from the House. You know, a lot of words are used to describe Santos. Embattled, maybe an understatement. What has finally caused members of Congress to move on this?
Well, George Santos is charged with 23 federal criminal counts, and the House has tried to expel him twice before. However, there were some who did not go along with it, some Democrats and Republicans alike, saying, look, we're waiting for the House Ethics Committee report. Now, the House Ethics Committee is made up of Republicans and Democrats, but it is supposed to be nonpartisan. And that committee came out with a scathing report against George Santos, and they recommended that he be expelled from Congress. Let me just tell you a little bit about what he's accused of in federal court and also by the Ethics Committee, violating, again, 23 federal criminal laws, using campaign funds for personal use, including trips, using all kinds of hyperbole and falsely portraying himself in his election, using campaign money for purchases like Botox and for OnlyFans. For those of you who don't know, I'm about to educate you. This is a subscription platform largely used for adult content. So, you know, there's also all kinds of fabrications he's known for. All of this, which really upset the people who voted and put him in that district, even the Republican Party.
Even the Republican Party, which has been reluctant to sometimes punish certain members of its own who have been accused of wrongdoing. You know, I should emphasize again, we are taping this Thursday afternoon ahead of the expected vote Friday. Do you have a sense on how Illinois' representatives might vote, especially Republicans?
You know, at first I thought that the vote in the House was going to be unanimous, quite frankly, that after the Ethics Committee came out with, as I say, a scathing report against George Santos, that everybody would say, you know what, he's got to go. But Santos is fighting back, and he had a very early morning press conference this morning, which I followed, and he said that, you know, this was basically just an effort to smear him, to destroy him. And he said he wasn't going to go down quietly, and he wasn't going to resign, because that would mean that those who want to expel him win. He said the only people who can take him out are the people who elected him, and they can do that by not reelecting him. But that also is sort of an empty argument, because he's already said he's not going to seek reelection. He has said that he has been convicted of no crimes, but he has been arraigned in federal court again on 23 counts of criminal violation. And so, you know, he has also said that in the entire history of the United States of America, only six people have been expelled from Congress. And they was either because of treason, because they were Confederates, for example, or because they were convicted in a court of law. He has not been convicted of anything, but it seems pretty clear that he will be convicted of something, including, you know, including violating campaign finance violations. And so he says, you know, I'm not going to go down. He also threw out a bit of a red herring when he said, if I'm going, then Jamal Bowman is going. Now, who is Jamal Bowman? He's a Democratic congressman from the same state of New York who's been very outspoken against George Santos. Well, Santos is saying, if I go, Bowman has to go too, because he pleaded guilty to pulling a fire alarm during an important House vote. But here's the difference. Bowman's been charged with a misdemeanor. Bowman pleaded guilty. Bowman paid a fine of $1,000. And Bowman also wrote a letter of apology to the U.S. Capitol Police. That's very different when you stack that up against 23 federal criminal counts.
Yes, and lying to voters to get elected, allegedly, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I do want to spend this time on the Senate Judiciary Committee, headed by Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. We've talked before, I've talked with him, about the possibility of them authorizing subpoenas for Leonard Leo, conservative activist, and Harlan Crow, Republican mega donor, all relating to ethics at the Supreme Court, especially around Justice Clarence Thomas. This vote did finally come to pass this week after being punted previously. What happened briefly there?
It did come to pass in the Senate Judiciary Committee, but it was ugly. It passed with 11 Democratic votes and not one single Republican, because the Republicans walked out. And that was basically a protest over the entire process. Now, the Republicans were very angry. One of the members, Senator John Cornyn from Texas, accused Senator Durbin of destroying the Senate Judiciary Committee, which has long been known for its very friendly atmosphere and an effort to work together on both sides of the aisle. Senator Ted Cruz, also of Texas, said, "You know what? You violated all these technical rules in doing it." So he kind of got into the tall weeds. There's such a thing as called a 2-hour rule, that the committee has to be done in 2 hours. It wasn't done in 2 hours. He said there was no quorum. Well, there was no quorum because the Republicans walked out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, called the authorization of the subpoenas garbage and a complete joke. But Senator Durbin did not back down. He forced through the vote, even though Senate Republicans, not only by walking out, tried to end the vote, but they also had tried to delay the vote, filing 177 amendments in order to slow down the process. But Durbin, again, wasn't having any of it. And this is all part of the larger picture, which is an effort by Congress to try and come up with some rules, some laws governing how the Supreme Court does its business when it comes to ethics considerations, all stemming from these allegations against Justice Samuel Alito and Justice Clarence Thomas, and also, by the way, Justice Sonia Sotomayor. But the majority of them are against Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito for accepting vacations and other lavish gifts from these conservative mega donors, who later, some of whom had business before the court. So that's why there's a consideration about maybe the court needs to have some ethics rules that it has to follow rather than governing itself.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Mr. Leo and Mr. Crow respond to these subpoenas, given their past responses to the Judiciary Committee. And I know you will be there to cover it. Linda Kenyon, thanks, as always, for making the time to be with us on the 21st Show.
Well, thank you. You have a great one.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. We're in the middle of our Friday Politics Roundtable, and we turn now to Illinois politics, where this week marks an important milestone on the way to the 2024 elections. On Monday morning, candidates, or their surrogates, stood outside the Illinois State Board of Elections office ready to file petitions to run on the primary ballot on March 19th, just 3.5 months away. Jeremy Gorner is a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He covered all of this Monday and is with us now to talk about it. Jeremy, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Glad to be here, Ryan. Thanks.
Once again, listeners, our entire political roundtable this week was taped Thursday afternoon, so we are not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought. Talk@21stshow.org is the address. All right, Jeremy, there's something of a ritual around these petition filings in Illinois politics. I've covered this in the past when I was a state house reporter standing out there shivering with everyone else. What makes this week, that Monday in particular, so significant for the people who pay attention to these sorts of things?
Well, yeah. So when they submit their petitions, on the first day of the filing period, which lasts for a week, it ends this coming Monday. It basically makes candidates eligible for the top ballot position in their race. And, you know, if they're lying during the closing minutes on the last day of the last filing day, which is going to be Monday, December 4th, you know, they'll also take part in the lottery to appear last on the ballot. And basically political lore, as I've reported, and what you're kind of talking about too, Brian, political lore holds that candidates whose names appear first or last in a crowded field gain a slight advantage in the election. You know, obviously, you know, it kind of, there's a superstition that it kind of plays on the attention spans of your average voter. So that's basically what that's about.
Yeah,
in the candidates' minds. Yes.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of the right word to use. Lore is a good one. Superstition is the one I was thinking of. You know, you're really playing for the, and you know, a lot of voters are low information, right? They're busy. They don't have time to research, especially, you know, third tier judges in Cook County where they've got dozens and dozens of choices. So, okay. You know, talk about what the atmosphere was like Monday morning. I know back in the day, when Mike Madigan was still speaker, his organization would have people camping out days ahead of time in tents and sleeping bags outside.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. So it was really cold. It was in the 20s. And, you know, the first time I covered one of these, Brian's, was March 2022. And there was a lot more at stake last year, because not only did you have every, every state legislative race that was up for re-election, from what I remember, it was also the constitutional offices. So it was the governor's race, which was, of course, the main attraction. You also had the Secretary of State, Attorney General, all the constitutional offices. So you had a lot of people waiting in line. You had, you know, a couple hundred people waiting in line. And it kind of started the night before, where, you know, I remember then, you know, going to the Board of Elections parking lot the night before, and you still had quite a few. You had about a dozen people kind of camping out right in the parking lot, you know, for that. But this time around, you know, I went the night before. I went Sunday night, and there was one person who was camped out. It was just one person. It was a surrogate for longtime Chicago Congressman Danny Davis. His surrogate was the only one who was in line. And then by morning, and she was the first in line. And then by morning, you still had probably about a couple hundred people in line. It didn't look like the line was as big as it was last year. And again, that could be because it's not every state legislative race is up for re-election. It is all 118 state reps, but only 23 of the 59 senators, and none of the constitutional office holders. And then you have, every member of Congress is up for re-election. So, the line wasn't quite as big as it was this year, as it was last year, but it was cold out. Everybody was bundled up in parkas and still had their stacks of petitions, just kind of, you know, eagerly waiting in line and slowly filing in by 8 a.m.
Sorry, what are some of the big races we are seeing shape up? Talk about the congressional district in Southern Illinois.
Yeah, so I think the main attraction that you're going to see is the Republican primary down in the 12th congressional district in Southern Illinois. That's the incumbent is Mike Bost, who's been in Congress for about 8 years, and before that he was in the state legislature for 20. And his challenger is Darren Bailey. Obviously, ran an unsuccessful bid for governor against Governor Pritzker last year, and you know, also a former state legislator himself. So Bailey is running against Bost, and with Bost, you have you know, somebody with experience. You know, he's touted his experience. He's head of the Veterans Affairs Committee in Washington, which is a very, very influential position to have, especially, you know, if he's trying to appeal to his Republican base. Obviously, Veterans Affairs, a big issue for Republicans. I know. And, you know, and then you have Darren Bailey, who is trying to criticize Boss for his experience, basically calling him part of the Washington establishment and He represents the status quo. And it kind of speaks to how Bailey has always tried to brand himself as this outsider who's trying to challenge the status quo. We saw that in the governor's race last year, right? You know, and he's trying to carry that same message on to the congressional race. The key difference is that in the governor's race, it's a statewide race. So he's trying to carry that message as a conservative Republican in a heavily blue state, where clearly he was not successful. But in this case, he's running in a red district where he and Mike Boss, you know, in substance, they agree on some of the same key issues, you know, when it comes to the Second Amendment, when it comes to abortion. I mean, you know, both of them are pro-life.
Both of them have been Trump allies and gotten Trump's endorsements in the past.
Both are pro. Yes, both, of course, have been endorsed by former President Trump in the past. Boss in his bid, in his reelection bid in past years, and in a past year, and Bailey, obviously, when he won the Republican primary for governor last year. So, I mean, that's obviously kind of the million-dollar question is Trump going to endorse in this race? I mean, he's obviously been a little preoccupied with the indictments. Darren Bailey thinks that, you know, by March he will have Trump's endorsement, whereas Boss said if he doesn't get if Trump does endorse and does not stay neutral and endorses Bailey, Boss said that he would take it a little personal because Trump has supported him before. And so that's the thing, is that, you know, both of them conservative Republicans, both of them agree on some a couple of those key issues that really matter to voters, abortion and guns. And both of them have been endorsed by Trump in the past. And Trump, you know, even Bailey has said, you know, he could play a big factor in the race if he decides to endorse somebody.
Well, it's a race to watch. We will keep our eyes on it. I know you will as well. Jeremy Gorner with the Chicago Tribune, thanks so much for being with us for our Friday Politics Roundtable.
Thanks, Brian.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.